The first time the Bible speaks of war is in Genesis chapter 14 and verse 2. It's mentioned there without comment, seemingly as just a reality of life. 1 Samuel 19 verse 8 tells us, "Once more, war broke out." Seems to indicate that war was just a regular experience of life. It seems that since the beginning of time or not too long thereafter, we humans have accepted war, even while we despise the toll that it takes on human life, on society, on cities, on the land, and even on animal life. Maybe the reason we've accepted it in the face of all of that damage is because we love the superiority we feel as nations when we're the victors in war. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 8 that there is a time for war as well as a time for peace. And if 2 Samuel 11 verse 1 is any indicator, that time for war seemed to be spring, because it says there that in the spring was when the kings went out to war. Here in the United States, we've set a day in the spring not to go to war, but to remember our warriors. And as Dick indicated, it's called Memorial Day. More than a day to remember our veterans or our wars, Memorial Day is a time to remember those wars our nation has fought to defend itself and the things that we like to believe, at the very least, that we stand for. Those better things, those better principles, those better ethics, those better morals, those things that are more clearly and closely related to what we believe to be godliness. It's a day to remember the wars not only that we have fought in a variety of places and times, but to remember that we fought to defend our friends in other nations from becoming overcome by godless tyrants. And it is a day to remember that, as has so often been said, that war is hell. If there is any one thing that comes close to experiencing hell on earth, it is war. Memorial Day is a day to remember that, as the Bible acknowledges, war is a reality of life on this earth, and that it will be until life on this earth ends. And it's a day to remember that those who wage war without the command of God will answer for their actions. Primarily, though, Memorial Day, as it has been designated and as it has been organized to be celebrated, is a day to tell the men and women who have gone to war on our behalf how much we appreciate them. And so, all over our nation, we have ceremonies to do just that. We have military music, and we have speakers who try to put into words the honor that we want to bestow on those who we have designated as heroes. The very fact that they've gone to war in some sense, that they've served in some way to keep our land free, to uphold our standards, to be of aid to our allies, our friends. We call them heroes because they have braved life and limb on our behalf. And yet, with the establishment of Veterans Day in the fall, Memorial Day in the fall, Veterans Day, it seems that few of us think about personally thanking these men and women. And few of us show much appreciation to these men and women, personally or as a nation. Oh, tomorrow there'll be a short segment on the news in which we see the president laying a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns. There will be other ceremonies, perhaps with a little more publicity than others around the nation, that will gain a few seconds' notice on the news. And there will be people turn out to those, varying amounts, certainly by the amount of pomp and ceremony and importance it seems to go with those who make presentations. But in reality, relatively few people attend those ceremonies. Last year on Memorial Day, just as every Memorial Day, there's a gathering at Ivy Lawn Cemetery. And there are seats for probably 300 or 400 people. And maybe 125 fill them. Retail businesses seem to look at it only as a time to have special weekend-long sales, and we're barraged by all of these, whether it's car dealerships or malls or whatever it may be. If the weather is nice, we think mostly of going to the beach or to the park or maybe having a backyard barbecue. And I'm guilty of those things as well. I suspect that being involved in the military, and particularly at a time in which there is some kind of warfare going on, affects different people who are in the military in different ways. For my part, I came back from Vietnam not the patriot I was when I left. I didn't trust my government any longer. I found it hard to salute the flag, and to think about celebrating warriors in war was an extremely difficult thing for me to do for decades. But time and learning, and I'd like to think maturity, have a way of affecting those things. They've certainly affected me. By the time David was in his late teens, he was already known as a brave man and a warrior. In fact, as he comes down to meet his brothers as they are with the camp of Israel encamped against those of the Philistines, that's how David is introduced, as a brave man and a warrior. And he probably wasn't more than 18 to 20 years old at the time. And that was an honor, to be introduced and to be known that way. Years later, as king of Israel, David honored his 37 mighty men. And those 37 mighty men that we read about in 2 Samuel chapter 23 and verses 8 through 29 were all the greatest of his warriors. These men were memorialized in history by way of that. They were to be remembered and they were to be honored for what they had done, for how they had stood, for the courage that they had shown, for the honor that they had brought to their people. Christopher Marlowe observed, "Honor is purchased by the deeds we do." And so it was for these 37 mighty men of Israel. President Calvin Coolidge reminded that no person was ever honored for what he received. Honor has been the reward for what he gave. And so today, as we're thinking about Memorial Day, hopefully we're thinking about it, and hopefully we're thinking about all that it embodies, all that's implied through its remembrance, we're thinking about men and women of honor. And as we think of these warriors, we need to remember the sacrifices of individuals. We should truly honor and value such people for their conviction, for their heroism, and for their sacrifices. They have enabled us to live without fear of war on our land, in our hills, in our forests, and in our towns, while they fought in fear. If you've never been in a place or seen a place where forest has been literally cut down because of warfare within it, it is though you were on another planet. If you've never been in or seen a city, in which house by house there has been warfare. It is as though you were in a place that seems that it doesn't fit on the face of this earth. My cousin was a Marine stationed in Phu Bai. We were in Vietnam at the same time, and I thought I might catch up with him there. Missed him by about a month. He'd gone home. But I saw where he had been. It was a devastated, desolate town that had so many bullet holes and so many walls that you wondered, how did anyone get out alive? We must never forget that such people sacrificed not only their comforts so we could be comfortable, but they also sacrificed their lives or parts of their bodies for us. We've learned over the decades and the centuries that those who come back from war, if they come back, oftentimes have terrible mental and emotional prices that shape the rest of their lives or that cause them to end their lives. Some have suffered torture as prisoners of war. But all who've served in the theater of battle are forever changed. They've experienced the worst and the best of humanity. But the sacrifices of these individuals have greater and broader effects. Judges 20 and verse 46 speaks of a war in which 25,000 valiant fighters perished in one day. 25,000 in one day. This morning on the news, there was a segment about Arlington National Cemetery. And it gave the numbers of soldiers, of sailors, Marines, airmen, since World War I, who've been buried there, right up to the current time and the current wars we're involved in. In that one cemetery are buried over 700,000 men and women who fought for our country. Several years ago, when my dad's brother and his wife passed away, they were buried in a military cemetery just south of St. Louis. We didn't have an opportunity to do any kind of a graveside closure because they received so many soldiers and spouses each day that you come in a convoy up to the place that the coffin is simply taken out of the hearse and prepared to go into the place where it will be buried, and you have 5 minutes and you must move on. How many hundred thousand are buried there? I've been involved in the memorials for two men who were buried at the National Cemetery at Riverside. Much the same situation. So many people. So many lives given. Those 25,000 fighters, valiant fighters that we read about there in Judges chapter 20 and verse 46, they represent at least 25,000 families. We need to remember the sacrifices of families. Families of our warriors have often lost husbands, wives, fathers, and mothers. Parents may not see their adult children live to have children, their grandchildren. Children will not know or have the guidance of a parent who loved them. Families who must live with a notice of missing in action never have closure for their loved ones. Communities and the nation will have lost the value of those men and women who would have been brought to them and would have brought to them value as some of their most devoted citizens. And for those who did not die but have suffered other physical or emotional damage, their families, and in fact all of society, must deal with all of the costs in all the sense of that word for their care for the remainder of their lives. Those who have paid what we call the ultimate price had done what Jesus called for his followers to do in John chapter 15 and verses 12 through 13. Lay down our lives for our friends. That's the exceptional. And that's what Paul the Apostle wrote about in Romans chapter 5 and verses 7 through 8 when he writes to Christians saying, very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Christ did the exceptional. And he did it for every person alive, for friend and foe alike, for family and for enemy, for his nation, for every nation, for his time and for all time. As we remember the sacrifices of individuals and families through earthly wars, it's most important that we remember the sacrifices of God. God supremely understands the sacrifices of every individual and every family, everyone that has ever made those sacrifices through war. And into the sorrows and the sadnesses of wars and their aftermaths, God brings hope and joy and promise of a better future, of a better life, of a life that is untainted by war and all of its devastation. God sacrificed his only son, Jesus, in the greatest war of all time, the war against Satan, the cause of all wars that we experience on this earth. God did this so that we could live in eternal peace with him, without fear of war or Satan's attacks, without fear of death, without fear of dismemberment, without fear of disease, without fear of loss of any portion of our body or our mind or anything else that has eternal value. By his supreme power, God raised Jesus from death to life, overcoming Satan. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 8 calls for Christians to remember Jesus Christ raised from the dead. Partaking of the Lord's Supper, as we did just a little while ago, is remembering Jesus' sacrificial death for our sins, as well as his triumphant resurrection for our eternal lives. And so as we take into account remembering war and warriors, we need to remember that greatest of warrior, the one who fought Satan and won, the one who fought against wars on this earth to extinguish them forever, in a time that will be forever. By his supreme power, God will bring an end to all wars. As Psalm 46 and verse 9 says of God, he makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. And he alone has that power. And he alone has that love. He alone has that will. He alone has that plan and gives us that promise. So that all this that we remember this weekend and in the fall, and at any time, as Dick said, perhaps every day of our lives, all of this will fade from memory in eternity, as God blesses us with no wars for any warriors to fight. Of all that we remember about war and warriors and the human costs involved, we must remember God above all. It's so easy for God to get lost in all of this. It's so easy for us to depend upon strategies and upon manpower and upon mechanism. upon superiority of these things over an opposing army or an opposing nation or an opposing villain. That we begin depending upon ourselves so much and lose God in the whole process. And we become much like ancient Israel, who thought that they could go up against their enemy by themselves without the guidance of God, without the blessing of God, and without the power of God, and promptly lost miserably. We dare never forget God in all of this. Each day, God instructed Israel to celebrate or to commemorate was a remembrance of what God had done for them. Every time God told for them to celebrate a particular day, this was what it was about. Him, not them. He wanted them to remember what they could not do for themselves through their manpower, through their ingenuity, through their strategy, through anything else. It was a remembrance, each of these days of celebration or commemoration, of His love and His power and His activity in their lives. And so, as we commemorate Memorial Day, as we think of it any time and of all that it means any day, we need to remember that we have been so very blessed, that it has been so very long, almost 200 years, since warfare from another nation came to our land, and about 150 since we fought amongst ourselves on our own land. We can be blessed and remember deeply that blessing, that all of the ravages that go with that have not touched us in a very long time. In Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse 18, Moses told Israel, "Remember well what the Lord your God did." And God has had a hand in preserving us from those ravages of war on our land. It was always when God's people did not remember to love and obey and trust God that they were overcome by their enemies. It's always when you and I forget God that Satan, our only real and our most vicious enemy, overcomes us. And that is why, by inspiration of God, Paul wrote so very clearly with such strong warning that we must take on that armor of God to withstand the attacks of Satan. Certainly, he had far more in mind the spiritual than the physical. We dare never walk into any event of life without the armor of God on. Every day is a memorial day to remember God in every imaginable way. So the real question for you and I to consider within ourselves, and to do so very seriously, is, do you remember God in your life every day? What He has sacrificed, what He has done out of His love and His power for you. If we can help you.